This is Who Kicked the Corner Flag, an English soccer game show podcast. And here's your host, James Rose.
Welcome to another tasty edition of our quizzical soccer show. Glad to have you here. The show, of course, would not be complete without the North London rivals. The first is the leader of the KC Spurs and still counting the goals scored against United. It's Jared Bustamante. Hoi, bud.
I'm tremendous.
No, absolutely no one can see that.
It was great. if you would have asked me a week ago, might have had a different answer. We delayed, and you know what? Hard to be in a bad mood.
It's hard. And
plus, now I think we have two mascots. I think we picked up a mascot on a free transfer, which is very exciting. It's nice to have a backup in each position.
I like it.
Finally.
Spurs have a mascot? I actually didn't even know that Spurs had a mascot. What is it?
His name is Chirpy, I believe. Yeah, Chirpy the Cockerel.
He's the Cockerel.
Yeah, I don't
know. Delightful.
St. Mesut of Ozil is apparently saving our mascot to enforce his PR ambitions. At any rate, James, are you going to introduce me?
Thanks. I was going to say, the other voice you hear is the leader of the KC Gooners and the man who wept at the lone departure of Lucas Torreira and Gunnosaurus Rex. It's Mr. Boyce Richardson. How are you, bud?
Let's get a party started. I mean, I'm going to go through my entire party playlist. You got to fight for your right to party, like party in the USA, although that's weird. It's like a party in the UK, but it's one of those things, one way or another. Like, all the party song puns.
So who did you sign again? No, I'm just kidding. All right, folks, let's get down to it. One of the latest games of the weekend saw arguably the biggest shock of all time. Aston Villa squared off against title holders Liverpool in what was thought to be a comfortable win for the Reds. No offense, Aston Villa. What resulted, in course, was many people turning on their TVs halfway through the game after getting texts from their friends saying the result was 7-2 to Aston Villa. Seven goals versus two to Aston Villa. Insane. Insane stuff. So, Boyce, we're going to kick off with you with your first quiz question. When was the last time defending English top flight champions shipped seven goals in a single game? Was it 1995 or 1953?
I think it was 1953.
That, sir, is absolutely correct. So that'll get you those first 2 points.
Nottingham Forest, who was it?
Well, that's a good follow-up. Who was the team in 1953 that won the title and then shipped seven goals in a single game? Any guesses from either of you?
Manchester United. I have no
back
idea.
Back in the 50s?
Back in 1953.
I'm going to go with like an Everton.
It wasn't. It was Arsenal. Would you believe it? Arsenal.
Oh, man. I'm committing that to memory. Look at that.
1953. They lost.
Cheers. Are you thankful now, boys? It's not Cheers. Just you now.
I was actually going to guess that just for fun, but yeah. I didn't want it to be true. So there you go.
It was Arsenal. It was 7-1 versus Sunderland. So there's a real fun stat
we
for you.
Until the 60s. I knew
it wasn't. Guys, how did this happen? What went wrong for Liverpool? They just seemed so comfortable, even starting off this season really strong against Aston Villa. The odds must have been something ridiculous, like 1,000+1 that you'd see this scoreline. We'll start with boys. How did it happen?
Deflection University. I mean, it's one of those things where like this is one of those matches where like the football gods decided that Liverpool needed to lose 7-2, which is fine. If they want to continue to do that, it's fine. But the thing is that like, even sort of including the fact that Adrian was in goal and Alisson wasn't, you can't legislate for the amount of goals that were scored. And listen, Villa were great on the day. They took it to Liverpool in a way that I think very few teams have. I'm not going to celebrate Arsenal here, but I will say that like Liverpool had Arsenal on Monday and Arsenal on Thursday in two matches that were a little bit hard. And I think especially the Monday one, they were very, very focused on after having lost to Arsenal last year in the campaign, as well as in the Community Shield. And I think they put on a full force effort on Monday and they turned around and overlooked Villa on the following weekend. But I also think that irrespective of all of those things, you absolutely cannot legislate for the fact that Villa kicked the ball, it hit Liverpool players, and then it deflected into the back of the net. Like, an unparalleled number of times. I'm not a Liverpool supporter. Nobody on this podcast right now is a Liverpool supporter. But I cannot even imagine being on the other side of this match. I just can't. Like, watching that match and seeing, listen, Aston Villa expressed themselves. They've done very well in the transfer market. I saw that ESPN had them rated as one of the highest transfer market success stories this year. I think they've done a phenomenal work, and they owe Arsenal for all of that, for losing to them last year and then beating Watford on the last match of the season. But credit where credit's due on that front. But I legitimately think that so much of that was just due to Liverpool sleepwalking into the match, them having Adrian. And then in the end, if Aston Villa were in the 18-yard box and they kicked a ball at whatever direction they wanted, it ultimately hit Van Dijk and went in the goal. You know what I mean? Like, it was one of those matches where you're just absolutely snake bitten. And the other thing is that in the first half, it ultimately ended up 4-1 and Liverpool were pressing. And once Liverpool started pressing, it was a situation where Aston Villa felt exceedingly confident and they absolutely hopped on it. And I think it's one of those things that you're going to see this year. Admittedly, you know, again, we have to talk about the fact that Alisson was not there and that, you know, they have high quality players like Thiago Alcantara was not there as well. So, I mean, you're talking about some of their reinforcements not being available. But again, from an excusability standpoint, you still have the full Liverpool roster minus their goalkeeper, and everything that Aston Villa did went in the back of the net. Some of it wasn't great, but a lot of it was.
Yeah. Jared, what's your take on it? Do you think it was, as boys suggesting, boys, kind of somewhat of a fluke? But what are your thoughts?
Did you stretch today to bend over that far backwards for Liverpool? Good Lord, the fact they don't have Thiago, this is still a team that we've seen score record amount of points. And by all accounts, we had seen fix their questionable defending issues over the last 2 years. Sure, it wasn't the prettiest. But the fact of the matter is, you still have a team that is more than capable of scoring goals, more than capable of scoring goals against the likes of Aston Villa, we thought, against anybody in the league. We talked about this going into this year, that are they the team to beat? Are they going to be, it's just them against the world? Are they the Kansas City Chiefs of the Premiership? And we all kind of agreed, like, yeah, there's going to be some challengers here. We're going to look at the Chelseas. We're going to look at whether or not City, they can rebound, Arsenal. No one said that Aston Villa was going to thump them by 5. And maybe we all need to have a Marvelous Nakata on our team, because with a name like that, how can you not have unbridled success? Yeah. You can chalk it up, I think, to a lot of it's just Aston Villa, everything went their way. And they have done solid in the transfer market. They put themselves in a position to win. By putting bodies in the box, getting forward, and just taking whatever Liverpool gave to him, which it turned out to be quite a bit. Mm. So to that point, I think Liverpool might have come into this match going, you know what? We'll score. And they didn't. And they never did.
I mean, they did twice.
And, well, enough. You're right. In this league, you'd think, yeah, you'd think that'd be fine. You'd think that'd be enough. And it wasn't. All credit to Aston Villa for not only winning, but pouring it on. I mean, yeah. My God, you look at this spread. And, you know, I don't know who Ollie Watkins is, but I like him.
He's their record signing.
He's probably going to be.
Is he the record signing? He was from Brentford, right? They got him for like 33 or 34 million. Yeah, yeah.
I want to see the stats on how many people had him in their fantasy Premier League, and I want to see how many have been added.
Not me.
And I want to see how everyone is disappointed, because my man's going to fall. You got to regress to the mean at some point. But
I mean, are we talking about Chelsea at all on this podcast today? Can I just get out that Timo Werner has been the single greatest fantasy Premier League letdown in maybe the history of fantasy Premier League? What a disaster.
Man, we'll start talking about transfers here at this point. Yeah.
Long story short, credit where credit is due. Aston Villa, kudos, good for you. Bringing Liverpool back down to earth, I will always be fine with that. And what this is brewing, what I'm very excited, is that we might have meaningful Merseyside Derby football this year. And
also parity.
Yes. Oh, that's what I mean. I mean, like, that's like, we're talking those matches. Those are no longer going to be matches about pride. Those matches are going to be 6-point swings and very well could be in play. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Jared, I did have a quiz question for you on this one, which I'll throw at you real quick. How many errors has Adrian made that have led to opposition goals in his 21 Liverpool appearances? Is it 2 or 5?
This is a trick question. I'm going to say 5, and I'm going to be upset when it's wrong, but I'm sticking with 5.
It is 5. Nice.
Hey, look at that. 2 points.
It is 5. So I know you kind of both suggested it, but clearly Adrian's not the suitable replacement.
Those are Kepa numbers. Those are Willy Caballero numbers. God.
He was bad. He was bad. I mean, he was unfortunate in certain circumstances, but also his positioning was garbage. He's awful. At least he didn't cost Kepa money. What did Kepa cost? 72 million euros? Ridiculous.
Something north of that, yeah. And I did read, too, that
record,
I think,
goalkeeper signing, Kepa, yeah?
Yeah. The funny thing is, as we were getting through the transfer window this time, that the record central defender and the record goalkeeper in the Premier League are, it turns out, bad.
As both we might get onto here in a second, actually.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about the Manchester United match. Oh.
Let's go ahead and segue onto that. Let's move on to that fixture. We saw two big six teams face off in a tasty fixture. Spurs traveled north to face a United team that ended up conceding 6 goals, 2-1 final score there to a woeful Ole Gunnar Solskjaer side. Jared, this first question is for you. Who were the last team to score 4 first half league goals away at Old Trafford? Was it Liverpool or Spurs?
Like ever?
Like ever.
Premier League era, or is this just...
Let's call it English top flight football. English so pre-1992 or 4, whatever year it was.
I'm inclined to say Liverpool.
It was Spurs! Would you believe it? Spurs.
I knew you were going to get me. That's fine.
In 1957. They were the last team to do it.
Hey, we were good in the 50s. There you
go. Oh, those were the days. Jared, you must obviously be delighted, as am I. Did you expect this kind of result, though?
Of course not. Anybody who says that they were ready for Spurs to hang 6 away at Old Trafford is out of their mind. Look, you know, my wife and I were talking the other day that whether or not the home in a way is a bit neutralized this year with no fans. I'm pretty interested. I would like to see the, you know, the standard deviation of goals and the percentage of wins and stuff like that this year. I think that's going to be very interesting. I think, of course, you don't have that energy from the crowd and all of that. However, it's still your house. You're still in, you know, places with a lot of history. And you're in your clubhouse and you're not traveling. So there are, you know, these other things besides just the roar of the crowd when you're introduced, right? That being said, no one thought that was going to go this way. In fact, 90 seconds into the goddamn match, I guarantee you everyone was like, well, here we go. This is it. It's a double whammy in conceding a penalty and then having Bruno Fernandes step up as, you know, someone who is a target signing for Spurs and bury it as a tremendous penalty taker he is. However, what a response. What a response from this team to come back, put goals in the back of the net, and then keep it going. Keep just hacking away at this United defense, which is absolutely hilarious. I mean, I know they think, you know, I'm not sure Edson Cavani could have helped him. I guess we'll see. But right now, they were a collection of barrels. Some great midfield play from Spurs. You want to look at finally having, you know, the likes of, you know, Tanguy Ndombele really in and getting forward and, you know, really putting some things together. Serge Aurier didn't kill a guy, so that's great. You got to love that. Plus he scored. And one of the things that was really interesting is when you look at, and you look at this documentary, you know, really the difference in style between Poch and Mourinho. And I'm liking the insight to just the difference in personalities where, you know, I feel like Poch almost needs to be the Argentina manager. He needs to be the guy to come in and yank all these young kids up and say, you know what? You are wearing this kit. Go out and fight for Argentina. Because the difference has been, and I forget who the reporting was on this, was the tactics of Mourinho in high press, going after the wingbacks, making sure you go and get wide, and hitting the likes of Mason Greenwood and, you know, hitting those soft points in Manchester United. And you notice they kept doing it. They kept at it. You had like-for-like switches that would keep going and goal scored from wide areas, from wide areas, from wide areas. And then hurry from the spot. And that's kind of been the difference. There was an Eric Dyer segment where he talked about there was, you know, every single time we sit down with Mourinho, there is, you know, almost a dossier. And this is where we're attacking. This is what we're doing this week. This is who we're going after. Okay, go break. Whereas Poch was almost this, we are awesome. We are good. We're going to get out there. We're going to have fun. We're talented. And we're just going to go with like raw talent. And I think that worked to a point. But then eventually, I'm beginning to see a little more why a playmaker like Christian Eriksen was a bit frustrated in that system. Because it wasn't really a system. It was, let's get out there and let's go forward. Let's surround us, have the right players. I'm not saying Pochettino was running on hopes and dreams. But it was clear that there was some separation in the locker room. I still miss the guy. I still cherish him. But I was thinking a lot about this. That I think I could see him as a as Argentina's manager, take over, be a talismanic driving force that's not, you know, Diego Maradona, and then lead them somewhere else. But you love to see the tactics. You love to see the result. And I got to say, you know, here, you know, post-deadline day, I know we're taking a look at that center back kid from Swansea. We can still sign some EFL players and stuff like that, which is a weird sentence to say. But you gotta like the transfer window for Spurs and feeling like we actually have backups in every position.
Yeah. James, can I get my quiz question so I can tear into this match? Let's just do this.
You don't get a quiz question from this one. You do get it in the second section. It's all about balancing it out. But I am going to ask you, boys, because we did talk about this before the recording. A certain moment did happen, which some would argue kind of balanced the game more in Spurs' favor, and that was the Eric Lamela incident, where he somewhat clawed his face, fell down rather dramatically. Your opinion on that, but give us the overall scope of your thoughts on the game.
First and foremost, I'm going to preface this by saying that I think the Spurs were the better team on the day, sort of generally. There were multiple opportunities and multiple deflections kind of leading into that moment. But Anthony Taylor deserves to be fired for this whole entire incident. Like, it was inexcusable what Eric Lamela did. He actually hit Anthony Martial in the face first and then somehow managed to get tapped in the face and fall down to the ground like a little peasant and get Anthony Martial sent off. It's Mourinho-level tactics. It's absolute garbage, and it's inexcusable in the league. I think 9 times out of 10, given the status of the match where it was, Spurs ultimately end up winning. And that's fine. But I think what Lamela did was absolute poor form, poor sportsmanship, and especially the fact, my problem with Taylor isn't the fact that he sent Martial off, whatever, he tapped another player in the face, that's the way that it is. But Lamela actually hits Martial in the face as well. Like, the lead up to that is one in which both of those players should have been sent off. And the fact that both of them weren't, just, it shows and demonstrates the level of absolute porousness and crap quality of EPL officiating. It's awful. It's just awful. Like I watched it and I saw the two of them jostling around in the penalty box. And you think, okay, one way or another, this is ultimately going to result in a little bit of like retribution on the part of Martial. And I don't understand VAR. We talked about it before. If you're going to send Martial off there, you absolutely have to send Lamella off there. There's no, you can't allow that pattern of behavior where the ultimate goal is to Diego Costa, the opposition, into making a small mistake. And the thing is, listen, I understand that the rule is if you hit somebody in the face, you get a red card. But let's not pretend like Eric Lamella suffered an incapacitating blow to the face. He got tapped. And then he grabbed his face in the ultimate, like, it's one of those things where we can talk about this again, but I remember, like, people that have exaggerated things before. If Eric Lamella wasn't a white dude, like the level of English press punditry for what he did in that instance would absolutely be all over the place. Cheers, it absolutely would. Because he grabbed his face and went down to the ground like he was Joey Barton against Arsenal years ago when Abu Diaby slapped him for trying to take his ankles out. And it's ridiculous. You just can't possibly have it. Like you can't deal with this instance where you can goad somebody in to a small indiscretion and you get sent off when the player that does it, where it's obvious. Like you can't look at that replay and not think that Eric Lamella was doing his level best to do everything and get as close to his face as possible. And he engendered a reaction that would not have hurt a 5-year-old school kid and like got Anthony Martial sent off. And the thing is, again, Spurs were the better team up to that point, but it was 2-1. And every single other goal Spurs scored were related to that. So none of the other goals really matter because they were against 10-man opposition. They were not scored within the flow of the match. Like it just, Anthony Taylor ruined a match when the opportune decision was to make it 10-10.
Do you think
it just was
some kind of argument for accidental, like Eric Lamella's trying to kind of pull back versus?
I don't think it was accidental at all. Nope. I don't think Lamella's was accidental, and I don't think that Martial's was accidental. And I think that that ultimately means that both of them need to be sent off. Because the thing is, Lamella touches Martial's face. And if you're going to do a strict liability ruling based upon what the Premier League rules say, Lamella touched Martial in the face. And you cannot possibly tell me that that was not on purpose. Mm-hmm. It absolutely was intentional.
Jared's absolutely. Ready. Jared's ready to respond. He's got his hand up and everything.
I'll be brief.
Okay, now you're good.
The fact of the matter is, if you are going to red card Eric Lamella, then, I mean, we all know that there's no consistency, even with VAR. But, and precedent means nothing with respect to VAR. So, this is really just a specious exercise, but that means there is zero jockeying on a corner kick, which is what the situation was.
Was not jockeying.
Ever.
Nope. It was not jockeying. Please. It was being fucking dick. It absolutely was.
It was Eric Lamella.
He was trying to hit him in the face. And the one other thing,
he was jockeying and he was putting up, he was trying to get under skin. So here's my compromise. The compromise is Martial. That is in no way. We can all agree, that was prompted. Martial didn't turn around and just smack him in the head for no reason, right? It was prompted. So guess what? There's a strict liability. You cannot be baited into acting like a moron. He's sent off. Lamella, you're jockeying before. You're trying to edge a guy in there. That's a caution. That's a yellow card, hands down, the entire way. VAR should have been. I would have been fine with pulling it back. However, like you said, turning around, slapping a guy in the face, the fact that he went down and sold it, brought attention to it, you know as well as I do, that's part of the game. That's not going anywhere. VAR has, if anything, codified that.
But let me say this. I do want to clarify my earlier position, which is to say that there was a red card offense in this match. There absolutely was. And it was, again, on Manchester United. And there was, again, a player that should have been sent off. And that was Luke Shaw, who did exactly what Granit Xhaka did against Swansea City oh so long ago in terms of hacking a player down from behind with no intention to go for the ball. Mm-hmm. No intention whatsoever. Red card every time. Granit Xhaka got that red card for 3 or 4 years ago against Swansea at the halfway line, which was even further away from the goal than what Luke Shaw did, and nothing. Jared's right. There's zero consistency, and it drives me absolutely insane. VAR has done nothing. It has done nothing for consistency.
I'm so glad you're back on this, boys. You've come with me. It was a horrible idea to begin with. Add another set of eyeballs. I never understood this. If their biggest issue was crap happening in the box, put another set of eyeballs on the post, and that official governs what's going on there.
Dare I bring up a third incident that we might, well, we haven't mentioned it yet, but there was an incident where Harry Kane went down. I believe it was tackled by Eric Bailly, and Bailly supposedly put studs into Harry Kane's calf, which, again, maybe they overanalyzed, but the...
I'll say this. I didn't see it. I don't remember that instance, but I will say, since we're not going to talk about them tonight, the exact same thing happened in the Arsenal match where somebody cleated 2 feet off the ground, cleated Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He went down towards the end of the first half over the ball. The same thing that Nketiah and Aubameyang both did last year. Both got VAR'd for red cards. The VAR didn't even check it out.
Son got VAR'd for a red card last year for that. Coming over the top with studs up.
And I think that's correct.
That's per se dangerous play, right?
And that's my problem. My argument, again, is not that like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang or Eddie Nketiah didn't deserve the red cards that they got. Those are the rules of the game. My problem is the fact that there's no way that a year later, Sheffield United should have a player that does the exact same thing, that goes studs up into somebody's shin, potentially does a leg-breaking tackle, and doesn't get sent off. And it's the same thing with Luke Shaw against, I think it was Harry Kane. I don't remember who it was, but it's one of those things where if you do a tackle like that from behind when you have no chance at getting the ball, that's a red card. Yeah. It has to be a red card every time. And if there's no consistency in officiating, then we have moments like this. VAR is useless if there's no consistency. Yeah. Because ultimately the design is to ensure that VAR provides consistency, and it's not going to do it if you're not going to even check things that are red cards.
Well, on that note, let's go ahead and move on and talk about... We'll be here next week, folks. The final fixture was perhaps less intriguing, but one that saw a surprising team lock in four wins and four. Everton managed to dispatch Brighton despite conceding two goals. That puts them now in pole position currently in the EPL. So, boys, here is your quiz question. Over their four games, how many goals have Everton scored? Is it 8 or 12?
I think it's 12, isn't it?
Yes, sir, it is. It is 12. Crazy. That includes 5 goals over West Brom. So West Brom, whatever. But Everton.
Who would ever draw West Brom this year? Oh, yeah. Chelsea.
Oh, true. There you go.
Tony Pulis ball. It's back.
Good point. Everton, though, are they making some noise early on here, or are we not worried? What do we think about Everton, boys?
I think they're really good. I think we talked about this in prior podcasts. I think Everton went out and did what Arsenal necessarily needed to do, which was go out and just renovate its entire midfield. And now you see, you know, I think I would have had questions at the time that they signed James Rodriguez about just exactly how effective he would be in the Premier League, given his performances and where he's kind of bounced around. But I think what you're seeing is that he's still a highly quality player in his late 20s that's still a moderately around prime, and that for a team like Everton that had struggled for creativity for such a very long time and was playing like Gylfi Sigurdsson in the midfield last year and Alex Iwobi to a time. But like, you know, when you combine Alan and you have James Rodriguez and they went out and bought like Doucouré, they did a lot of really good work in the transfer market to be able to bring in the pieces that they needed. And I think one of the other things that they did even better than in previous years is that they didn't overspend, I think, for a lot of the players that they brought in. They got halfway decent deals. And I think James Rodriguez, they just brought in on salary, I think. I don't even know whether or not they paid a transfer fee for him. And Ancelotti's a good coach. And I think that the final piece of the puzzle has been the fact that you see Dominic Calvert-Lewin rounding into form and showing up on everybody's fantasy Premier League team, including mine. You know, the defense still isn't great. Jordan Pickford is a massive liability that you have to think that ultimately for a team that actually challenges them on the front end is probably going to create a dangerous situation or two for them. I think in the Spurs match, Spurs were just off for the day. They didn't really create a lot against Everton, and then they allowed for a lot of possession of the ball. I think when Everton comes into contact with the higher level teams, that you're going to see some challenges posed for them. I don't necessarily think that, I mean, obviously they're the last undefeated team in the league right now, and I don't think that that's something. Well, I guess Villa is undefeated too. Never mind. They just have a match less. But I think that those two teams are going to carry on in that fashion for the rest of the year. I think Everton are going to experience some challenges, but if you ask me whether or not I think that they have a comparable roster, at least right now, to Spurs, Arsenal, Wolves, I think they do. I think they're still a far shout to a certain extent from the top four. I don't necessarily think that their roster is going to be able to sustain for the rest of the year, and that might be where they fall behind, especially teams like Leicester. The problem is the fact that when you look at them generally, you have to compare them to teams like Chelsea, who have a terrible manager and pieces that don't necessarily look like they're necessarily going to be cohesive, and United, where Harry Maguire is pulling down his right back in the box to allow people to score goals. I mean, I saw a meme pop up today that was Lindelof, Harry Maguire, Juan Bissaka, and Luke Shaw coupled with David De Gea, and they were like, score against this. And it's everybody's just like, it's like McDonald's, 99 million customers served, right? Like, those guys they can't defend for shit. And it's just one of those situations where there are teams that have weaknesses at the top of the table. Spurs, Arsenal have a ton of matches with the Europa League. Leicester's going to be the same. Everton, I think they're out. No, actually, they're still in the League Cup. So they have that match, but for the most part, they don't have this schedule congestion and the fixture congestion that some of the other top level teams do. Mm-hmm. And you've seen in prior years, like last year, I think with Leicester, that freedom allows them to perform a little bit better and to not be quite so tired. So I think the fact that they're showing it early in the season when things are a little bit more congested speaks well for them towards the end of the season. And I think the other thing with Everton that you have to consider is they finally have an ownership group that's willing to spend a little bit of money. And I think if it comes to December, January, and you see that Everton are in a pretty good spot for potential top four contention, that you're going to see a little bit more investment in the squad. And at that time, that's when you're looking at teams like Leicester, Spurs, Arsenal, and everybody else that's in the Champions League, you know, expending a lot of resources in order to be able to play a ton of matches while Everton's just playing on the weekend. And if they can, I'll tell you this, I think if Everton are in the top six come Christmas, that we're going to be having real discussions about whether or not they can make a bid for top four at the end of the season.
Nice. Jared, would you agree about Everton's fortunes at this point?
I think they're good. I do think it's funny that all those liabilities that Blaise mentioned, all those guys played this week. You know, Gylfi Sigurdsson is still starting in the midfield. Iwobi came on for an injury for Charleston, albeit. But I don't know.
And Pickford gave up a goal.
Fair. I mean, there was talk of Paulo Gazzaniga going to Everton on loan and supplanting Jordan Pickford. I saw that rumor the other day, and I was like, I'm still confused how Joe Hart has jumped into two in the pecking order. I don't know if at Spurs. I have no idea what that's about. But
he's 36 and handsome. Did you see those photos of Lenny Kravitz over the weekend? He's still got 20 years to go.
Good Lord. So, yeah. I mean, Everton's good, you know? And, you know, but for, you know, more VAR architectural graph tomfoolery, Spurs win that match against Everton. So, you know, and the whatever definition of a handball is. But I think they're a team that's going to be reckoned with. They're organized. You know, to Boyce's point, Carlo Ancelotti is he's a world-class manager. And especially after this Villa-Liverpool result, I'm very excited. I was actually trying to pull up. I don't know where the first Merseyside derby is. But I think
it's in 2 weeks, I think.
Coming up.
Yeah. That is going to be prime time, Peacock, Gold, Diamond subscription, whatever the hell you got to do to watch.
Guys, we can't do this. I don't want to talk about Peacock. I don't want to do it. I can't do it. It'll literally be a 2.5 hour long podcast.
But I mean, that's top billing, right? So that's what we want. So good on Everton. You know, they're pulling out results.
Hey, Jared, just to inject. So it is the upcoming Saturday. So after the international fixtures, is at 6:30 in the morning on Saturday, October 17th, and Arsenal City is at 11:30 that day. So one heck of a day of EPL football.
Mark it down, because that's, you know, again, you know, that's what we want, and you know to kind of see those challenges there, and I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. We'll see what happens with good old Toffees. All right, let's go ahead and finish out with our usual favorite. It is, of course, a round of player profile. As usual, I'm going to provide 5 different clues to a current EPL player, each clue easier than the last. First person to shout their name and correctly guess said player win those points, but you only get one guess, as an incorrect shot does freeze you out. This week, the clue to these players is influencers. Influencers. This translates to players who have had a influential impact on some of their past fixtures. Crazy, crazy, but true. All right, here we go. Player number one is 26 years old. He is a defensive midfielder. Once on loan at Everton. Joined his club in 2014. Got penalized for handball last week.
Jared.
Yes, Jared.
Eric Dyer.
Ooh, you got me worried there for a minute. But yes, it is Eric Dyer. Nice work on that. And that'll get you.
Well, you said last week. I was like, wait.
Eric Dyer was at Everton?
Apparently so. Yeah. Who'd have thought? I didn't know that.
Okay.
That's what you're
throwing off as a defensive midfielder. That's, I think your stats there, James.
Oh, yeah, that's what I do here. That's what I do. Yeah, let's go with defensive midfielder. All right. Player number two. Once played for Sheffield United. Is a striker. Has 5
points.
Yes, Boyce. Oh.
Oh, I screwed this up.
Take a shot. You never know.
He played for Sheffield United as a striker. I legitimately had. Ollie Watkins.
It's not Ollie Watkins. That just frees you out. Jared, these last clues are for you. Has 5 plus goals already this season. Wears the number 9 shirt and currently plays for Everton. And is on Boyce's fantasy team, apparently.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah. Maybe a little bonus clue there. But yes, that is absolutely correct. And that'll give you those 2 points. Player number 3 is 28 years old. Spent 6 years at Bournemouth.
Jared.
Yes, Jared.
Callum Wilson.
Jared's on fire. Yes, it is. Callum Wilson is absolutely right. And that'll get you those next 2 points.
Below cherries.
Gotta love him. Gotta miss him. Other clues. Scored Newcastle's penalty last weekend. First name is Callum. Callum Wilson. All right. Player number 4. Scored 15 goals last season. Is another striker. Is 22 years of age. Plays for Chelsea.
Jared.
Yes, Jared.
Come on, man.
15 goals next last season.
You got this.
Oh, come on.
Why am I fucking blanking on this?
Come on. Yeah, I was going to say, at what point do I buzz him out?
You gotta buzz him out. Come on.
Yeah.
It's
Tammy Abraham.
All right, boys.
Thank
you. It is. It's Tammy Abraham. Yeah.
I was blank because he had the freaking thing with his birthday party and all this. That's what was in my head. I was like,
is it Jadon Sancho? I forget who the third one. Oh, Ben Chilwell. The other one that's out. Yeah.
Idiots.
They should have learned from Jamie Vardy when not to have a party. Anyway, Tammy Abraham is the guy. Player number 5 plays for West Ham. Where's the number 30 shirt?
Boyce.
Yes, Boyce?
Mikel Antonio?
Nice. Yeah. Mikel Antonio, it is. That'll get you those 2 points. The other clues. I
cannot believe he still plays football.
That's one of the clues. Striker winger has been with his club since 2015. First name is Mikel. Mikel Antonio is correct. Here is the last player of the game. And once again, the scores are close. So this could determine things. Let's see what happens. This last player is just 20 years old. Has spent his entire youth and senior career at Manchester City.
Jared.
Yes, Jared.
Phil Foden.
Man, he got it. Phil Foden is absolutely correct. And that'll get you the next 2 points. Nice, Jared. The other clues. Is a midfielder, netted 5 goals. And first name is Phil. Phil Foden, gotta love it. Guys, that is the game. And here are the scores. Boyso, you came away with 8. But Jared took the win. He got 12 points. How do you feel, bud?
Oh, man.
Look out.
Been a while.
On fire in the player profile, God. Jared.
On fire. The blank on Tammy Abraham didn't come back to bite me. So
I noticed there were no Arsenal players in the player profile.
No influencers, I guess. That's cool. A bit as a burn. I just did
this. Bellerin just had 2 assists, and it's fine.
Well, commiserations, boys. Didn't quite go your way this week, but how's things? Let's talk a little bit about Arsenal real quick. Thoughts on their performances this weekend and moving forward?
It's going to be difficult. I still think not getting Usa Moa makes things a little bit difficult from them on the attacking side and the creative side in the midfield, which is something that they've struggled in. I think Thomas Partey is a world-class elite-level athlete that, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, I actually think that he's a better version of Moussa Sissoko, which is meant as a compliment, really. I think he's a driver of the ball and somebody that has the ability to make a pass. He's just a little bit better, which is what happens when you spend 45 million euros. I think unless he has the ability to connect the midfield to the front three and allow a little bit more space for them and create some situations that Arsenal are still going to have a lot of problems against the low block. Big fan of Mikel Arteta. I think he's done well. I think Liverpool just came out on Monday in a formation and in a situation in a mental preparation where they were ready to go on full attack. And that team is high powered when that's what they decide to do. Still not sure that the acquisition of Partey, even coupled with Arteta and some of the formation changes that we saw, I will say, not to over explain the point, but there was a time where Arteta actually moved Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang central and played Saka on the left and Pepe on the right. And Arsenal looked a whole different animal with the 3-man midfield as opposed to the 3-4-3 that they've been playing, which I think would make a significant difference for the year. But even with the addition of Partey, I think there's arguments to be made that Leicester, I think certainly with the changes that they've made, even in the absence of Ben Chilwell, have a better roster. I think Tanguy and Ndombele and Lo Celso make for a fairly formidable midfield for Spurs, and their frontline attack with Bale is good, although I think their defense is not the same, even though I think that Reguilon's a good signing. I think that there are arguments to be made for any of those teams that are not Liverpool or City, who have both proven themselves already to be susceptible to challenges for the 3-4 spot. I referenced it earlier. I don't think Lampard's a good manager, and I think he's been handed a lot of parts that he doesn't necessarily know how to fit together. And I think that you're starting to see that Manchester United spending 80 million euro on Harry Maguire was a mistake, that it has inured to the benefit of Leicester as they've spent all that money, I think, fairly well. But ultimately, to Jared, I think, and I's point earlier, I think this is going to be the year where we see a lot of parity in the league. I think that the bottom four teams are really, really bad. They might be the worst four teams that we've had in the league for a lengthy period of time. But I think that the 16 other teams are all ultimately very capable of doing damage on their day. And I'm excited for the rest of this campaign because I legitimately think when everybody has their players healthy and ready to go, there we're going to see some high quality matches. And I think the only fear is what we also discussed earlier, that VAR and inconsistency are going to be the thing that ultimately have a very large impact on where teams finish for the rest of the campaign. And that is the thing that scares me a little bit, because I you want to see consistent competition, and I'm not sure we're going to see it.
Well, we will certainly see how this season plays out, but it'll certainly be one to watch indeed. All right, folks, that will do it for today. Big thanks, of course, to Jericho Cimente and Boyce Richardson. Stay tuned, as always, for updates on our social media at KickCornFlag on Twitter, on Instagram, and, of course, Facebook page. All right, guys, we will catch you next time.